Welcome to CERT's podcast series, Security for Business Leaders. The CERT program is part of the Software Engineering Institute, a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can find out more about us at CERT.org. Show notes for today's conversation are available at the podcast website. My name is Julia Allen. I'm a principal researcher at CERT working on operational resilience. Today, I'm very pleased to welcome my colleague, Nader Mehraveri. Nader is a member of CERT's Cyber Resilience Center. And today, Nader and I will be discussing the first in a three-part series that we'll be recording on principles and practices of operational resilience. And this series is based on Nader's extensive experience in applying operational resilience in a number of organizations. And also, these conversations reflect a presentation that Nader gave at the IEEE Conference on Technologies for Homeland Security in November of 2012, and we'll provide a link to his full presentation in the show notes. By way of background, if you are unfamiliar with CERT's work in operational resilience and our CERT resilience management model, we have posted a number of podcasts and webinars at both the CERT RMM and the podcast websites to provide some background for you. So with no further ado, welcome to the podcast series. Nader, glad to have you.
Hello, Julia. Thanks for including me in this program. I'm delighted to be here and talk about a topic that is very close to my heart, operational resilience.
Excellent. Well, this will be great and gives us lots of time to explore all the good content that you've developed. So to set the stage, it would be helpful if you could provide a few recent examples of the types of disruptive events that can really affect an organization's ability to be resilient, and by that I mean, and you'll obviously talk about this as well, to continue to provide critical services and business processes in the presence of some type of disruption or stress. So a few examples would help set the stage if you could be so kind.
The most recent example was the Hurricane Sandy that affected the United States just about a month ago. But, you know, almost every year recently, there's been one or two very major events that we'll never forget. Like in 2010 was the Gulf of Mexico Deepwater Horizon oil spill event that we continue to remember. In 2011 was the devastating earthquake followed by tsunami and a nuclear incident in Japan. And just, you know, in January of 2012, we saw those horrified pictures of the sinking of the Costa Concordia cruise ship in coast of Italy. So every couple of months, we see one major event that will remain in our minds forever.
Absolutely, and it seems that we keep having to relearn the lessons of the past every time one of those events occur. So let's talk a little bit more about Hurricane Sandy. I know in your tutorial presentation, you particularly point out some of the things that were expected, but some of the things that were surprising in that event. So could you talk about that a little bit?
So Hurricane Sandy clearly was a very major storm that hit eastern United States. It was the largest, from a size perspective, the wind diameter was the largest recorded in the Atlantic region, about 1,100 miles worth of wind diameter. So from that perspective, you know, any strong hurricane, we expect things to happen. In a hurricane, there's always expectation of flooding, and there was flooding, major flooding. In fact, New York City had the highest ever water levels recorded. In any hurricane, there's expectation of wind damage, and there was a lot of that in Sandy. Power loss is a typical after effect of any hurricane, and there was a lot of that in New York, New Jersey area. And we have learned that there's always a need for portable power generators. And this time, the the Home Depot and other hardware suppliers were ready. There was a run on power generators, but there was a good supply of them. At the same time, however, Sandy surprised us in a whole different set of ways. There was a major devastating fire in a neighborhood in Queens, New York, right in the middle of a hurricane that destroyed over 100 residences in that neighborhood. Major fire in the middle of hurricane is sort of surprising.
Right. You wouldn't expect with all that rain and all that flooding that fire would be an issue, right?
Right. And since people were not expecting a fire, the first respondents who deal with the fire were other places doing other things. Sandy caused a very strange weather pattern, which caused a blizzard in West Virginia on its way up to New York. Blizzard in the middle of hurricane is, and it's unexpected. They were not ready for it. And there were some very interesting pictures from Seaside Heights in New Jersey that if you looked at them, they looked like there was a sandstorm. There were 4 feet high sand dunes across the entire town. So the lesson we learned from Sandy is that doesn't matter how much historical data we have and how much prediction power we have in our computing equipment, disruptive events will continue to surprise us in ways that will disrupt our business operations. So the question is, you know, how do we deal with this concept of not always being able to predict exactly what's going to happen in a disruptive event?
Right. So we can, as you said, based on history, we can predict, but there's a whole other set of unknowns and uncertainties. And the real question is, as you framed it, is how can we prepare for the unexpected, prepare for the unknown, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, I mean, obviously there's a huge body of knowledge around business continuity, disaster recovery, crisis management, emergency preparedness. There are all kinds of traditional disciplines that, you know, have stood the test of time that allow organizations to protect and sustain themselves when such events occur. And yet in our work, the work that we do together, we are really finding that an operational resilience perspective can be more effective. So can you say a little bit about the traditional disciplines and this kind of evolution or migration in your thinking to operational resilience?
So you're absolutely correct. You know, disruptive events are not something new. They've been happening forever. And communities and businesses have developed over the years emergency management plan, disaster recovery plan. Our federal agencies have continuity of operation plans that they spend resources developing and putting in place. And all of those plans have to be developed, managed, updated. That takes time and effort. However, over the last 10, 15 years, those traditional preparedness plans, such as disaster recovery plans and continuity operation plans, are no longer sufficient. And organizations are forced into developing a slew of other preparedness plans to protect and sustain the operations. Some of the examples are, you know, over the last 7 or 8 years, there's been a lot of attention on dealing with pandemic plans, having protection plans in case there is a flu pandemic. So that's a new class of preparedness plans that are being developed. Recently, our organizations are dealing with more sophisticated contingency plans that deals with people-related issues, how to deal with the workforce not being available after an incident. And by workforce, I include in there executives and decision makers. So workforce continuity planning is now becoming another one of these individual siloed plans that organizations spend time and energy developing. Our globalization of manufacturing has made the supply chain a lot more sensitive to disruptions, and therefore companies and organizations are putting in place supply chain continuity plan to protect and sustain the supply chain. So we come into the mode of organization being forced to needing to develop a large number of such plans, and developing in silos are not efficient. Developing in silos are costly because they cause duplication of efforts. So the question is there a better way to go about developing these modern and needed preparedness plans? So a fundamental cornerstone in the concept of operational resilience is to somehow introduce some level of coordination, some level of integration across all preparedness plans, whether they are protection or sustainment activities, so they don't look like individual silos. That, I think, is a critical aspect of operational resilience that we are looking at and trying to determine what's the best way for organizations to achieve it.
Right, because it seems to me, listening to you talk, and I was unaware of some of the new areas that some of this planning is having to occur. There's the planning, there's the exercise and test, but then when something bad happens, obviously there's the execution, and you've got all these moving parts trying to coordinate a reasonable response and protect the enterprise and its customers and all the assets that are involved. So it seems to me that, as you said, developing in silos, how do you, in the face of an event, how do you orchestrate all of those moving parts?
Right. So if we continue our traditions, you would need a lot more resources than any organization can afford. In execution of each one of these plans individually and by their own, it's no longer feasible for anyone.
So can you say a little bit more about what you mean by operational resilience and why you think this is so promising as a shift or an expansion of perspective?
The concept itself is very simple. What can organizations, public or private, small or large, families or communities can do? So if there's a disruptive event that causes unavailability of certain resources or assets, how can those organizations continue operating, continue developing products, continue doing the business operations under stress while the event continues or while preparedness plans are being executed to recover? So that's the overall concept of operational resilience. It's not just dealing with individual consequences. It's not just dealing with individual assets. It's sort of a big picture look at an organization says, okay, what do you have to do? What are all the good things you should be doing on a regular basis so you are a resilient organization?
Got it. Thank you. So why do you think, I mean, you've laid the groundwork here in terms of what's happening in our world that is causing organizations to pay increasing attention, but can you say a little bit about why senior executives in particular in the private and public sectors, why this is elevating on their radar screen as something that they need to be investing in?
So our today's environment is such that the moment a disruptive event takes place, it's very quickly and very highly is publicized. And therefore, it is practically impossible for our organizations, our businesses, to sort of ignore it. And whether the effects on them is small or large, they have to respond to the fact that the event has taken place and they have to do something about it. I mean, just looking at the past 10 months, just looking at the events in 2012. There is a long list of major and minor disruptive events that became major headlines across the world, you know, ranging from other tropical storms other than Sandy, like Tropical Storm Isaac, that affected the Republican Party National Convention, which was delayed for a couple of days. Or just a few weeks earlier than that, Typhoon Haikui, that affected evacuation of about 1 million people in mainland China. Or all the disruptive events we hear on a daily basis on the news dealing with information technology and cybersecurity. I mean, just within June, July, August of 2012, we had a major incident at LinkedIn, a popular social network, that affected 6.5 million users' password. 2 weeks later, Yahoo was affected by a release of close to 500,000 passwords. And then just a week later in July, Twitter was down for a good portion of the day because two of their data centers failed at the same time. And then later in July, there was a major electric grid failure in India that caused close to, I think, 600 million people to be without power. So events are happening quite often, and maybe not more frequently, but they're very public. And therefore, businesses have to respond to it, and therefore executives are paying a lot more attention to it.
Right. Well, as you said, with the news cycle and the way information is instantly released, and customers can be very fickle and end up doing an instant migration to what they perceive to be a safer space, it can have a lack of due diligence in this area can have an immediate effect on your bottom line, right?
Right. And organization asking the question, hey, are there more disruptive events happening? And I mean, that's a good question to ask, but it may not be the best question to ask. In fact, there is no consistent set of data that one can use to say, hey, there are more disruptive events happening. But a better question to ask is, even if the number of disruptive events are not increasing, if something else has changed that causing disruptions to be more important or more critical? And the answer to that question is definitely yes. What has changed over the last 10, 15 years is the fact that our risk environment, our global risk environment, has changed and has worsened. And here are some examples. You know, clearly, globalization of our economy has resulted in our organization's dependency on resources all over the world. So when there is a small disruption in a particular part of the world, if that affects the supply chain, it may affect a large number of companies here in the United States. That's an increased risk in our manufacturing environments.
Mm-hmm.
Our business operations have become a lot more complex, both in public sector and in private sector. And therefore, smallest disruptions and disturbances causes the entire business process to fail. We don't have to have more disruptions, but even small disturbances causes a much bigger effect. Pervasive use of technology. We all now are fully dependent on our mobile devices and our laptops. And that now, when there's a small disturbance, there's more effects of it. So the question to ask is, how should organizations deal with this expanding and worsening global risk environment? And the answer might be that, you know, the traditional techniques that we all have been using may not work anymore.
Right. It also occurs to me as I'm listening to you speak, we talked about instant media attention, but this whole phenomenon as brought on by the use of technologies around speed, the fact that so much of this is happening faster and sometimes is harder to detect in advance sufficiently to mitigate the effects, and so you're dealing with the aftermath. So speed, it occurs to me, is a significant contributor to what is changing and shifting, and thus the need for more automation support, right, in terms of the response and the recovery. Are you seeing that as well?
Right. We no longer can depend on quote-unquote manual operations to recover from incidents because that just takes too long. And our business environments in general is a lot less friendly. That is, if there was something we could get away with 10 years ago, we no longer get away with it. And therefore, recovery procedures have to be much faster, almost immediate, to the point that maybe the customers or media won't even notice that an organization was affected by a disruptive event, but they continue providing business.
Right.
So we have to remember a very important thing, that today's business environment is very, very unfriendly to organizations, to the point that some of them may not get a second chance if they're not effective in dealing with that first major incident.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we come to our close, Nader, could you just, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, this is going to be a three-part series. Could you give just a short preview of what we might be talking about next so we can intrigue our listeners to come back for more of this conversation?
So I have mentioned a lot of my observations. So I think it would be good for our listeners to also see some indications from other sources that will indicate that, yes, there is a desire. There are people who are asking questions, say, what are the better ways to deal with disruptive events? So we can give our listeners some indications of what are other places, what are other organizations who are asking for better ways of doing this. And then there are some concrete techniques that and approaches that organization can take to improve and measure their operational resilience. And that would be another interesting topic to discuss with our listeners.
Excellent. Those are great teasers. So can you provide, at this juncture, some additional places where our listeners can learn more about what we've been discussing?
So as you mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, I was fortunate enough to be able to give a half-a-day tutorial on the subject at last month's IEEE conference on technologies for Homeland Security. So that material from that tutorial will be available to our listeners as part of the show notes. And from a bigger picture perspective, if our listeners go to the CERT Resilience Management website, they'll come across a slew of material on that website. And then by listening to part two and part three of this series, then actually we'll pick up additional information.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward, Nader, to our continued conversation, and I thank you so very much for your time and preparation today.
You're quite welcome, and thanks much for the opportunity.